Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. This is the Eat, Sleep, Elite, Repeat podcast. This is your weekly AEW review and breakdown. Introducing first, the man of the hour. Now rise up and feel the power. Gnarly Charlie.
Beautiful intro, as always.
Yo, what's up, everybody? They call me the Duke. They call me the Digital Phantom. I am the other half of our hosting duo, Bane Duke, also known as the Duke of Derbs. Yo, 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 yo.
I don't know. Right. Maybe I was a dying fork.
Dying doors over there. Anyway, good. Some good wrestling this week. Some really fun stuff. Some absolute slobber knocking action, as Jim Ross likes to say. People got the shit kicked out of them this week, Charlie.
Holy shit, they did. And I genuinely, Garrett, I cannot wait to dive into some of these matches. I just...
Same. Especially our favorites this week.
AEW is just in such a nice spot right now.
They are, which is kind of weird to say because like they just had like all the injuries. But, you know, like they got a big enough roster. So people that were complaining about the roster size, Tony Khan must have fucking known. He paid some like... mystic on a mountain to tell him, you know, you must sign more now. You are going to get injuries on this date, you know, so that's great. But before we get into some of the other stuff this week, there are a few orders of business to take care of off of the top. The first of being whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, make sure you go ahead and hit follow, subscribe, whichever button appears on that platform, be it Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. I actually thought I fumbled over those words, but I actually didn't there. Hey. But anyway, and also make sure you follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Bane Duke, as I mentioned already, BaneDuke on Twitter, and Charlie is at Charlie with an X instead of an A. All right, so as always this week, we're going to start off, as we always do, with our favorites, and since we're on... odd episode, I believe it's on me this week. So
yes, it is.
We're gonna start off with actually the opening. We're gonna start off with the opening of Rampage, which is a bit odd, but hey, whatever, we'll take it. We always like to say that they open and close the shows pretty solidly good matches, so it makes sense. We had Konosuke Takeshita taking on Eddie Kingston. Which just on paper sounds awesome. I think this is like one of those random matches I rattled off that I wanted like right after, Konosuke came to the company, because just about his style and how they hurt, like how it hurt, probably hurts to wrestle him and blah, blah, blah. But like, I wrote so much down about this match. Konosuke just looks super smooth when he's like transitioning, like between the locks and the holds, like the sort of like the mat wrestling that I always talk about. He just looks so damn smooth doing it. And I don't know what it is about when Konosuke does like those flying like elbows, and like when he just flies across the ring just jumping, he just like, he floats, dude. Like Dante Martin like kind of like levitates, but this guy, like, he floats across the ring. I don't even, it's the most wild thing I've
ever
seen.
The way he executes those moves, man, it just feels so believable.
Couple of things. First of all, Eddie Kingston absolutely deserves the Jun Akiyama match. I don't know why they haven't just like figured that out yet. Just make it happen. Like, whoever is, like, whether it's AEW or the people that Akiyama works for, make the match happen. The guy obviously wants to put on, like, one of the greatest matches of all time. And that's his guy. So make it happen, wrestling world. I'm calling you out. But anyway, there was a series of, like, heavy strikes. And then it went into this sequence that was, like, German suplex from Konosuke, Saito suplex from Kingston, another German suplex from Konosuke. And now I believe on that one, Eddie, like, literally landed on his fucking head. Like,
yes.
And then that floated over, and then after that, German hit like what they called like a raking enziguri, which just sounds awful and looked awful to take too. And then that was followed up with a running knee by Takeshita. You know, I don't like obviously seeing Takeshita take a loss here, But after the incredible like sequence of near falls that led up to it, it felt like he didn't like just lose the match. And he also, I think, took two hurricanes to put him down. So, which is that spinning back fist from Eddie. So like that's, you know, I think the only other person that we've seen take two hurricanes was like a big dude, right? Like, so not that
Kanosuke. Yeah, just the way he. Yeah, and I'm with you on this one, man. This was just yet again another star-making performance for Kanosuke Takeshita.
How have they not signed him yet, Charlie?
Maybe they're not legally able to because of the partnership with DDT, so he's just on an excursion, but maybe I'm sure they'll make a way to extend the excursion.
If there's not like a 4 years left or some shit on like his DDT deal, like they've got to figure out how to sign this guy because he's a star for an American audience. Like,
he's special. He's very special. And yeah, that sequence you went over and just even at the end there, blocking the first spinning back fist and then going on to just.
Yeah, how often do you see that? That someone actually blocks a spinning back fist? Like,
yeah, and I gotta say, I think you nailed everything, man. This very smooth match. Eddie Kingston, again, he's such a great wrestler. Takeshita, you know, knocking it out of the park yet again. It's a match I didn't know I needed, but as soon as we saw it on Wednesday that this was going to be happening Friday, I was like, oh my God, yes. Count me the fuck in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is going to be, I want to see Kanosuke on TV more.
That was definitely one of my favorites. And then let's hop into my actual favorite. And that was the debut, the AEW debut of Rush facing off with Penta Oscuro. I thought Rush looked fantastic in his singles debut here. Right off the bat, these guys are just chopping the shit out of each other. You're already like, here we go. They've done this before. This is not their first match. It's time to do this in front of the American audience, in front of, you know, a national TV audience.
20 seconds into the match, Jose and Alex just attack each other because of LaMau, which I think is hilarious. And we need that match.
Fucking landing spears. I mean, dude, they did it all. And but this doesn't go without a little it wasn't a perfect match. It wasn't flawless because at the end they did the Penta mask thing again. And the only reason I say again is because I believe 3 of the last 4 times Penta lost, someone took off his mask.
I think people are literally just probably coming up with that idea because they're like, how do we beat Penta without beating Penta right now? Like, because they don't want to – no one wants Penta to lose this momentum because Penta's awesome right now. But like –
I'm imagining at Fyter Fest week 2, we're going to get the Lucha Brothers versus Rush and Andrade, and it's going to be fucking incredible.
Yeah, that should be really awesome.
That being said, I thought Rush and Penta here, just such great chemistry, such big – a lot of the big like luchador-type spots, whether it was hitting missile drop kicks, bullhorn drop kicks, the chops like we mentioned, but yeah. So I really like this match, and have not watched Rush wrestle in a long time because I did not really keep up with his ROH run. I think I watched him wrestle Bandito in ROH, and that's it. So
it's been a long time. Yeah, this was my first Rush match, personally, and I really enjoyed
it. And for being his first Rush match, yeah, what did you think of this one?
Like I said, Jose and Alex being that just like pops me every time they attack each other just for no reason. And I love that it was just like out of nowhere. And then Jose was like, what? I'm fine. I guess we're fighting now. Like, it was great. There was a beautiful looking like snap power slam from Rush at one point on Penta.
Oh, that
was a really, really great looking spot. Like, that's like when I talk about like a big dude can just make a really, that's like honestly not that complicated of a, I mean, I'm sure a power slam isn't easy, but like, that's like a pretty, a lot of people hit power slams. The only other person I can think of that hit a power slam like that was Randy, and Randy's isn't that tight. That thing looks nasty. But like you said, the chop battle. Then there was a sequence, dude, where they kept headbutting and throwing knees and palm strikes. And it was just like nasty. And I kind of want to see Rush versus Rey Fénix as well now because of how Rey Fénix wrestles and how he just puts all the like, force in the world into every chop and throw and move. And
dude, that match is going to kick ass.
So I'm really excited for what's going out of this. And like this was just an awesome match. I was really excited too because once I saw like Rush's body type and his like ability to like it looked, you could just kind of look at somebody sometimes and be like, yeah, this is going to be really fun. Like, I could tell, even if they don't wrestle the way I think they do, that it's going to be really cool just because they're, like, they look like... Some people are just built for wrestling. I feel like Rush is a perfect example. But yeah, no, I for a first match that I've seen, I'm excited to see what this person does. So,
Anyway. Yeah. So that being said, I mean, what we'll kind of do now is we'll hit a little bit of news here that we got for this week. And then we're going to jump into some Elevation and Dark results, followed by the Rampage and Dynamite results. Excuse me. By the way, I can't wait to talk about Dark because I think we got one of them on my list for favorites of the year. So,
really? Can't
wait to talk about that. Oh, yeah. So
I should probably have been keeping a list of favorites of the year. I have not been.
We have a couple little short news things here. So we have Pac's second title defense, which, by the way, his first title defense is going to be on this following week's AEW Dark. So as you guys are listening to this, you know, everything you guys listen to is in the past, but this actual week's AEW Dark, you can catch Pac versus Shota Umino. His second title defense will be in July at an over-the-top wrestling promotion, which is, I believe, is an Irish promotion, and it will be against LJ Cleary, someone who I'm not familiar with, but what I'm guessing AEW is going to do is put that match on an Elevation or a Dark. And Garrett, I fucking love that idea, by the way. Of putting these title matches on Elevation or Dark that are in other wrestling companies, so we can still watch the match without seeking out said wrestling company. That's good for everyone.
It does suck because it means like some actual Dark matches will probably get cut that would have originally gone in those places. But I mean, like the other thing is, the thing I think is interesting about this is I was thinking about it just now. Like, you couldn't do this on TV. You couldn't just be like, yeah, and we're going to show this match that was recorded 2 days ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of this hour of wrestling. Like, no, you can't do that.
You can't.
So like, unless you specifically said like, hey, we're going to tape this episode of Rampage weirdly this week where we shoot this match over here and then we cut back and they just put a bunch of AEW stuff up on the ring or something so that it would look like it would look seamlessly or something. But like, but there'd be no way to do it. So you have to do it like this. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. I don't know.
Right. It's a way for us to watch the match.
Like I said, I'm just glad I don't have to go find them now. So
100% agreed. And we've had some Darks run, you know, 2 hours and this, I'm sure they're just going to add to these because Dark's already taped. So, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Some more Impact news. Actually, last week we had we talked about Alan Angels debuting and we got another guy, Kushida. He debuted in the inner Derby City Rumble. So, cool.
Yep.
Cool for Kushida. I'll
have to see what Kushida does over there. Impact is actually building a pretty interesting roster. So, I mean, they might actually be like, in the mix again. You never know.
Yeah. Hey, if we hear about their next fucking big pay-per-view doing well, I'm always down to – if we get some hype going into it. I like their champion, Josh Alexander, so –
yeah, he's really good. So
Tony Khan has announced Forbidden Door events will remain in North America. He was speaking to the New York Post, and he said the idea of doing an event over there with AEW stars and New Japan stars is very potentially interesting, but if it happens, it won't be Forbidden Door. Forbidden Door is going to stay in North America. It wouldn't make sense with the time zones, the revenue. So, you know, if they do, I'm guessing there's going to be a New Japan show, whether it's Wrestle Kingdom, which makes the most sense, where you're going to have AEW guys show up. Because last year they tried making Wrestle Kingdom 3 nights. You can make it 3 nights again if instead of Noah, instead of pro wrestling Noah athletes showing up, you have AEW. So, yeah, that's cool. Because I know that is worthy of note because we talked about before maybe Forbidden Door 2 is in the Tokyo Dome and like how cool that could be.
Obviously, that's not happening, but it's a little disappointing because you were thinking, like, what I was saying to you before the show was like, you know, the way I was hearing it, like Rocky Romero and, you know, John Moxley, we're doing a lot of in between, and I'm sure other pro wrestlers as well. We're doing a lot of in between, and it sounded like the relationship was good. But then I also just heard that apparently Tony Khan and Gato didn't meet until the day of the event. So,
yeah, so
I don't know what that suggests. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But either way, you know, as long as they can work this out and we can get shit, like, I would love, even if it's not like a, I would love like some sort of other crossover show that was in Japan. Like even if we can't get a Forbidden Door over there, like
just there, something, yeah,
has to be some way to get American wrestlers in Japan like that. Like without it just being on a New Japan show, like I don't know. But
and our last little bit of news here was Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling's Mayu Yameshita, who recently was on AEW, has earned a future shot at the AEW Women's World Championship. Yemeshta put herself in line for a shot at the championship by defeating Thunder Rosa in a non-title match at TJPW's Summer Sun Princess 2022 event on Saturday. Rosa said during the lead-up to the match that she would give Yemeshta a title shot if Yemeshta won. A date obviously hasn't been set, but during the press conference, Rosa said Yemeshta knows her schedule and knows where AEW goes. So, cool.
Tyler Perkins does a wrestling. No, I'm just kidding.
And what's cool, what's worth of note here is we actually commented on this a couple weeks ago when Meltzer mentioned a report that AEW is interested in doing a Rosa versus Yemeshta match. So
yeah, so this was the setup for that, and we'll get that down the road. So that kind of also somewhat confirms, because if they're down the road booking for title matches like this, I guess it doesn't have to be Rosa, but you would think it would be the person she pinned. So maybe we'll just get this on a random
Rampage. Maybe Fyter Fest night too. Maybe this is, I know, who knows, right?
Did they screw up the graphics? I thought it said week one on it instead of night one.
Yes, week two. My bad. Yeah, it's a 2 week thing.
Okay, so Fyter Fest is 2 weeks. I've not seen a Fyter Fest.
The greatest image ever.
That weird. Okay, like we'll talk about it when we get to it. But that shark cage looks fucking weird.
So yeah, man. Oh, I got a funny pitch for that. Yeah, take the people through some Dark Elevation results here.
Yeah, AEW
Dark July edition, by the way.
Yep, AEW Dark Elevation episode number 74th of July special, which was only 36 minutes? Question mark. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Maybe there was a plan. You know what my thought was with this, Charlie? Maybe there was a plan to release a special episode, but then they realized, oh, the 4th is on a Monday. Shit. People complain about when we release two in one day. Let's not do that this time. And then they were like, well, we'll just call it the 4th of July special anyway. Whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Show opened up with Anna Jay being accompanied by -1. This is a really quick kind of squash deal to it. There was oh, by the way, the jobber in this match was kind of entertaining. She did some, she was like a gymnast or something, and she did like a weird like horror themed like flip forward. It kind of vibed to me like when Alexa Bliss broke her arm kayfabe, you know what I mean, and popped it out of socket or whatever.
Yeah,
but I have no idea where they find these people, but it was kind of funny. And then she did that, and then Anjay was like, nah, we're not doing that shit, you know? And then walked into Queen Slayer.
Nah, fucking happened.
And she's been picking up some wins on Dark recently, so I'm just, my only question is, I wonder who Anna Jay is losing to.
Yeah, she's...
I always say it, and I'm always right, and it sucks, but it's the kind of, it's like I said, she's like the female Eddie Kingston, and you can't have her win, but you also can't have her lose too much. Like, anyway.
She's got a great record, right?
Yeah, we had the best friends picking up a win. You know, they kind of let the other guys do a little bit in the match, which I thought was interesting. And then Chuck hit this like nasty looking pile driver for the win, which I mean, I think question was this taped like randomly weird time? Like, I don't know what the hell. Like, we haven't had them. Like, it wasn't until Rocky went back to New Japan that they even needed to start tagging together again. They almost kind of sort
of. Yeah, I think they're just back now. Yep, I think they're just back now.
It is a little weird that we went back to Roppongi Vice for like 6 months or whatever, and like they did some really great stuff and even got title shots.
I loved it. I even predicted them to win the titles.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that they could have, and it would have been really interesting. But obviously now, well, maybe it's because Orange was. Do you think it was really because Orange was gone and they didn't want to do the trip, the tag?
Probably. And they knew when Orange would come back, they could reunite the team again and get some pops going with the new song and everything. Okay.
I mean, fair enough. I spent way longer talking about this match than I thought to. But yeah, like that, like Omega Driver looking thing, I think is what it's called in like 2K22 or something. It looked really cool. We had the first of two matches this week featuring Lethal and Satnam Singh, the one in a billion. This was really quick. Satnam looks strong as fuck.
Yeah, he does.
I don't think that man even moved, and he just like got lifted into the air. And he has like a tornado power bomb that is his finish that looks absolutely nasty. Satnam Singh might actually be awesome. I don't think he's going to be wrestling longer than 5 to 10 minute matches, but it's going to be great, I think, hopefully. I mean, you put him in there with the right people and it could be awesome. So,
yep. And so far, so good.
How long before Wardlow gets pinned by Satnam Singh for the TNT champion? No, I'm just kidding. anyway, But yeah, I thought that was it was fine. We had Anthony Agogo, so he wasn't on commentary this week for Elevation because he had a match and it was really fast. The dude tried to do some shit and he's like, "No, dude, we're not." And he just hit the governor's hammer. Yeah. Oh, hits the governor's hammer for the W. And then we had one of my favorite, actually, like just random throwing togethers of a team they've done recently. We actually talked about, I think, about this last week, that this was going to be a pairing that they did. And we had Hikaru Shida and Yuka Sakazaki teaming up to take on some jobbers. And I just thought this team had some really cool energy.
They did.
Bro, Yuka is way too strong for that small. Did you see how long she held on to that one person for?
Yuka Sakazaki, seriously.
That chick was not small, and she was just like, yoink, and just held her up there while Shida figured out the spot, like, to hit the Falcon Arrow to end it. Like, that was, like, wild. I was just like, damn, all right, Yuka, I ain't gonna fuck with you. But I'm glad that Yuka is back and listed on the roster again and stuff, like, because I would like to see Yuka used more. Like, if you need someone, I mean, I don't want Yuka to become the person that just loses to people, but they got a cool enough moveset. You could do it. Like, just give Yuka some time. Like, this is part of my big complaint is, like, they don't use the women like this enough. Like, you could use Yuka in, like, a mid-card, like, feeding people wins role, like, and or anybody for that matter that can put on a good match and then just have them. And they've done this before. And
it feels like if you want. Dude, right now, you ready for this?
Okay.
If Yuka's able to pick up and lift Jade over her head, I think you could build a fucking entire storyline around it, and she could be the one that beats her.
That would be awesome. I don't know if that's possible.
David versus fucking Goliath storyline.
Because the image against them across the ring from each other would be incredible. But, I mean, like, I if she can, that'd be awesome. I don't know if that's going to happen. Jade probably has to help a little bit on that one, but... But
could you imagine like a Cesaro picking up fucking Big Show type vibe?
No, yeah, absolutely. The vibe. No, absolutely. I agree. And she might be strong enough to do it. I just don't, you know, I don't want
to
kill her.
Tony should just be like, hey, so I need to try something.
I need you to try and lift Jade really quickly for me.
Can you pick her up over your head?
And then Jade's just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, like, anyway. But yeah, no, I want to see them, tag them together again. They seem like a fun team. It feels like the more women they tag together though, Charlie, that they're going to introduce women's tag titles and it's going to be fucking nonsense.
Fuck no, do not want it.
But anyway, not that I don't think that could ever work, by the way, I expect it to work.
Not,
but like,
this company is not
a wow. And like, Stardom, I expect them to have tag titles and stuff like that because they're just a wrestling promotion at that point, you know what I mean? But like, anyway, so we'll actually talk about the main event of the show actually now instead of just stretching like I have been. But we had the factories QT Marshall solo and Kamoroto taking on Dark Order's Uno, Ten, and Reynolds, which is again, I it appears to be the trio they're going with. Going forward, I would rather it be Silver, but they obviously wouldn't use Silver in singles. And they were also accompanied by Negative One on the show. A lot of Negative One this week.
Yeah, I think with them being in Rochester, they planned it out.
Absolutely. Completely makes sense. You know, probably got got Negative One and the others all in when, like, they could get Brody Lee or whatever, Junior, in for this stuff. But anyway, they had a triple body slam spot. I could not get that out. It just didn't wait. made my brain fucking reboot, bro.
You popped me. I guarantee I wasn't the only one.
Anyway, we had a classic AEW tag team main event, and we had Ten pick up his first of two wins on Dark this week with a discus lariat. And it was good. It was good stuff in there. You put those six in, you're going to get something good. And then that takes us to AEW Dark episode 151, Rum Pineapple Juice. Go.
All right. 151. Thank you. I was actually wondering what episode it was.
You like what I did there too? Anyway.
I did. And Garrett, holy fuck, the match we open up with. Lee Moriarty facing off with Leon Ruffin. Dude, loved this match. This was fantastic. Leon Ruffin, formerly of Leon Ruffin NXT, to me, Garrett, I haven't mentioned this in a while, and like you, I need to go back and mention and figure out what matches I said this for. This is definitely on the potential of my dark matches of the year. I do think this will probably make the top five. Like, I know for a fact right now, this is my favorite match on Dark in months. Easily, months. And I just thought the chemistry these guys had was incredible. Leon Ruffin did a spot with his head in the ropes that I haven't seen in years. And I missed that spot, bro. Tyler Bate used to do that spot. And he would just – every time he hits it, it's a fucking pop. And Leon Ruffin can do it. Leon Ruffin makes Lee Moriarty look fucking huge. And
yes.
Lee Moriarty, when he's standing next to Matt Sydal, he always looks big. So it's like – this is just a good pairing, and hey, man, shout out the guys. Shout out this match. This is, to me, this is an AEW Dark match. These are the kind of guys that should be getting the reps on AEW Dark.
Yeah.
And elevating their craft. So.
Well, I just like that Lee Moriarty is like, he's treated now like it's funny because if you roll back 9 months, like we were watching Lee Moriarty lose to people that he shouldn't have been losing to, 1,000%. Like, just because he was good enough that like, because they would do this thing for a while where they would have people on Dark that were really talented, like him, like Anthony Green, like random people. And they'd have a star come through that needed a win that they didn't want to put on TV that week for whatever reason. And they would just – they'd have a good match, but it would be like 10 minutes and they would just not get to do much of their own stuff. And it would be really unfortunate because you could tell there was something there with all these people. Well, they had to start acknowledging that some of these people were good because they were getting pops from the crowd and stuff. So, like, Lee Moriarty was a big time Ring of Honor guy. Roll back 2 years, you know what I mean? Like, but like, there's obviously been a lot of shakeups since then, and it's just like it's wild how, like, guys like that and what is the guy that was the Ring of Honor Pure Champion before? What was his name?
He's also on this show, Mr. Josh Woods.
Josh Woods. Yeah, so, Josh Woods was in that same spot for a while. Like, he was Ring of Honor Pure Champion, but he was being beat by people on AEW Dark for, like, no reason. Like, it was wild. Yeah, like,
and so, absolutely. And Moriarty hit the elevated flatliner for the victory. Bear Country defeated the Skulk. It's nice seeing the Skulk back. Adrian Alanis and Liam Gray. And this is pretty quick. The Skulk got in some offense, but shortly after, they caught Gray in a power slam while nailing Alanis with a power bomb. Moments later, Bronson came in and hit the cannonball for the win. So, cool. Buried Country. It's always nice to see them get some use. And, you know, we always like to shout out these independent wrestling tag teams like the Skulk, where, you know, most of probably like 85, 90% of their bookings are those legit, true independent wrestling. So,
absolutely,
it's nice for them to get booked on the show because they can put it on their resume. And
it's probably one of those groups that you would have seen, like if you were trying to go and see one of your favorite former WWE. Like,
it's been a couple months, man. People. It's been like 3 or 4 months since last time we saw them. So it's been.
I think we saw one of them a little while back. I remember seeing them recently. Like, they've been back recently a couple times, and
but they have a good look. And yeah, Bear Country, man, cool.
Speaking of people who haven't been on in a while,
AQA, she defeated Avery Bro. Every Bro was very aggressive in this match, and pretty much she kind of had the almost – it feels like the offense most of the match. And AQA ended up hitting her with the rolling neckbreaker for the victory, so she's still saving that shooting star press.
Good. I'd like to see it when – I'd like – you know that that'd be awesome if she doesn't use that – that she uses this like neckbreaker thing for a while, and then like she faces Nyla Rose or something and like hits that neckbreaker, but Nyla kicks out at one. And so she has to use the shooting star press or something. That'd be awesome. Like,
yeah. And former ROH Pure Champion, Josh Woods defeated Barrett Brown. This is very quick. The story of the match here was Tony Nese and the simp appearing in the ring or appearing outside of the ring, Mark sitting Sterling. In chairs.
Simp Mark Sterling.
Yep. So this is quick. Again, I love Josh Woods' takedowns. He's a big guy. He's got a great look. I love the little mouthpiece. I truly think there's a spot in this business for him.
Absolutely.
Sonny Kiss defeated Lamar Diggs. Diggs kind of got the advantage early, but I hate that guy's ring gear, Lamar Diggs. It's just as plain as it gets. And it truthfully, I don't know, you just got to – maybe that was his point since he knew he was just being a heater for Sonny Kiss here. So maybe he's like, eh, I'll go something a little more plain. But either way, it worked. Moments later, Kiss tapped him out with a crossface. So Aaron Solo defeated Fuego del Job. No, Fuego del Sol.
Yes.
Pretty solid match.
Fuego del Vlog.
Hey, del Vlog. Future Dark Order member Fuego del Sol. Let's book it. Yeah, I mean, I got nothing here.
They did some good stuff. I mean, it was Solo versus Fuego, so it's a couple of friends. Yeah, so they put on a good match.
They did some good stuff. The story
I was hoping for more.
Yeah, the story was kind of, you know, still bitter about Fuego not joining the factory. So Marshall was out there. He hit an apron, distracted the referee. I mean, we're getting referee distraction victories over Fuego del Sol. So his booking has not been that great in this company, and we're getting that kind of result. So at least they're taking him. I don't know.
I thought Fuego won this with a roll-up. Am I wrong?
Aaron Solo defeated him.
Really? Huh.
This led to Solo hit a backdrop bomb for a very close near fall. He was frustrated at this point, which allowed Fuego to tap his arm and roll him up for the win. Wait, Fuego did win, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess this just has it wrong. Whatever.
Yeah, it's weird. Sometimes I get those results. That's why I just write stuff in my own notes, so I don't get anything wrong.
Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh had a quick squash victory, like you said. Singh delivered his signature spinning helicopter bomb on a man named Darian Bergston and his other partner, Gus De La Vega. We'll give shout-outs to their names. And then our main event of the evening was an 8-man tag, the Dark Order, which we called last week. Evil Uno 10, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds defeated the Wingmen, Peter Avalon, Ryan Abbott, J.D. Drake, and Cesar Bononi. Nemeth and Uno started off hot. Tags were frequent, pretty much. And, I mean, the story here was the Wingmen kind of were just getting their asses whooped all match. They got one last gasp, hit a few combinations, top rope maneuvers for getting scumming to assist dive from Reynolds and 10. Avalon was rolled in the ring and hit with a discus lariat from 10, which gave Dark Order the victory. Dark Order getting victories past couple weeks. It all led to them to get a beautiful promo on Dynamite, which we'll talk about in a second. But
yes.
Yeah, man. I mean, yes. Not a horrible. I got nothing to complain about with these Elevation and Darks this week. I think there was stuff we had to look forward to. Some good matches on both. A little different than a couple months ago when it felt like there was weeks on a row. We were like, man, this shit just, we got to move on.
I mean, it still has the same problem that we had like 6 months ago, which is that they're just not featuring any stars. But it sucks because they won't. So it alternates between two problems, right? It's like that they're not using enough big-time talent on Dark, which is still not, but it's whatever. It's better now than it was. But the other thing is that nobody gets any time. This was, I would say, my biggest complaint about both shows. Nothing felt like it got time.
Yeah, so, just Lee Moriarty in the main event there, really, for Dark.
And I can't think of anything on Elevation. Maybe the main event got some time.
Yeah.
Because, like, Anna Jay was quick, you know?
It's very
cool. Lethal and Satnam was less than 10 minutes, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not looking at actual match times. I'm just remembering what it felt like, you know what I mean? So it's like,
and it felt quick. I mean, Sonny Kiss was quick, yeah. So let's jump into AEW Dynamite here. So starts off with Sky coming out with a full entourage, including Dan Lambert, Ethan Page, and plenty of fighters who people believed were actual indie wrestlers and not actual fighters.
Yeah, they didn't look like they brought in the MMA fighters this time, probably because they didn't want them just getting tossed around by Wardlow.
Yeah.
Like,
so this was a TNT Championship street fight, and I'm going to bury the lead here. Wardlow fucking destroyed Scorpio Sky.
Was it a street fight? I mean, was there any street fightiness to it? Like,
yeah. This was a slaughter. This was, as people are calling it, a squash. I'm not going to sit here and argue because I can't disagree.
One thing I wrote in my notes that it's kind of sad that I had to write this, but it was true, was like, what a disaster Scorpio's title reign turned into.
Oh, yeah, dude. But it all led to this. It led to Wardlow being crowned champ. Now Wardlow is the actual dominant champion. He wrapped up his MJF storyline and was still able to snag a title. So, you know, we kind of talked about it last week. Wardlow really can't. How was he going to lose this match? And we felt bad for Scorpio, but at the same time, his big moment was winning the title that second time over Sammy. So, I don't know. We can go back and forth on this. I'll just talk about the match real quick.
Well, you know what's silly is, like, what was the point of not letting Sammy Frankie? I couldn't even remember who it was because Frankie was so inconsequential in that storyline. Why even ban them from while Scorpio's champion? So they banned them for what, 3 fucking weeks, like, or whatever? Like, not really, but like,
his second title reign was 70 days, so.
And he was, and they didn't even get banned until like halfway through that. So, like, if you combine the entire title reign that he had, I think it was like,
I thought maybe they'd get by with the gimmick of a street fight, but
didn't, and I'll tell you why they didn't, because this is all that happened that was against the rules. There was a low blow, okay, fair enough. There was some minor interference with people stomping on the outside, but then Scorpio stopped them for some reason. What? But I mean, whatever. I guess he wanted to win it straight up. But like, even then, why do the low blow then, right? And then a belt shot. Those are the only things that happened. Wardlow did not take advantage of this stipulation at all. I'm not saying that he should have. He doesn't need to. But if you put yourself in a fucking street fight with Wardlow, Wardlow should make you pay for that. Like,
and he had his powerbomb symphony, and
happy for Wardlow winning his first championship at AEW.
With a massive celebration.
How they botched themselves into this corner, I don't know, but
hopefully now, in 6 months from now, we're talking about how this is still an ongoing title reign, and it's great, and they've elevated Wardlow even more.
I mean, but the TNT title is basically like the revolving door championship now. You know what I mean? Like,
the TNT title is not where it was when Miro won this thing last May. So let's hope it gets back up to that.
Did Sammy Guevara ruin the TNT title? Is that what happened?
No, because
people are going to say that. Like, someone will say that eventually.
There was a lot of short-sighted booking decisions with the title. And the reality is Scorpio's range probably should have just been 1 week, but you can't do that. So there was just a lot of short-sighted decisions.
In reality, Scorpio's reign should have been like 6 months, like we're talking about with Wardlow, and Wardlow should have won the world title, or at least challenged for the world. See, there's no way that you could have. It was a disaster.
If Scorpio never won
for Tony booking-wise, because he couldn't have had him beat CM Punk if CM Punk was. But you could have maybe used the excuse that, well, he's not going to challenge a Forbidden Door because he wants to challenge somebody from Japan. You could have bought that, right?
Yeah.
But not Wardlow, but CM Punk wants to challenge someone from Japan or whatever as his first contender. But like, it was just horrible timing because MJF did what MJF does, and he made Wardlow into a fucking star. You know what I mean? And yeah. Not that Wardlow wasn't already there. I'm saying, like, because of that storyline the two of them ran, it turned Wardlow into like the most over babyface on the AEW roster right now, probably. That's probably not a stretch, right? Like, I think so. Like,
he's up there easily.
He's certainly up there. And then, like, you can't then have him beat Punk, but you really shouldn't have him beat Scorpio either, because you're trying to build Scorpio up as a legit guy too, because he's been doing the tag thing for so long.
Unfortunately, now, yeah, Scorpio's back to dark. He is. This storyline is ran its course. He's probably out of the mainstream for a while now.
And so that, you know what sucks about that too? That means that Paige VanZant, who came in and did a great job, who I'm not sure would have been around at lunch anyway, but maybe for some one shots here and there, like she did for the one tag match. Okay, that'd been good. We just completely dropped the storyline for the second time with her and Ty Conti now, which is a little like, what the fuck? And then like, now, which is understandable because they inserted them into the JAS storyline, but like even then, like whatever. I'm just saying, like that this kind of, and I don't think fans of AEW are going to want to admit this right now, but Wardlow being as over as he was with the crowd for Tony Khan was kind of a disaster, because as much as he wanted Wardlow to get over, I'm sure, and wants everyone to get over, clearly he had plans that he couldn't execute the way he wanted to now. And he kind of had to pivot because he knew everybody wanted to see Wardlow go after the world title, because nobody buys that Wardlow would say, I've got enough wins and I'm the number one contender, or at least the number two contender, or whatever he was at the time. And I would rather go after the TNT championship, because
yeah, it doesn't make sense. We heard his excuse. It's because it's the one he felt cheated out of by Max. So, I mean, they did try to cover their base with that. But I don't know. Hey, look, I'm just glad he hasn't lost steam. Wardlow is still as over as he was.
It's because they had to keep Wardlow's momentum alive. Like now, but I feel like everybody's aware of the fact that they've just sacrificed Scorpio Sky in the process. Like,
yeah, and it is what it is. I mean, look, he's more over. That's the way AEW is going to run. If you get naturally over, you're not going to get thrown under the bus.
I'm just saying it's a bad look, man, especially after all the stuff that happened like last year. Like, it's a real bad look. Like, I feel like
he's just got to go.
And nobody's saying that, though. And you know what's the problem is? Because everyone likes Wardlow. So no one's going to say it about Wardlow.
Exactly.
But like,
that's why no one's mad. That's why I'm not mad. I love that Wardlow won this title. Because this, we need this title to get back to what it was. I hope he keeps it the same colors, by the way. I don't know if he's going to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like it was a Scorpio thing, so they probably will just change it back to the standard championship. Or maybe if it'd be kind of cool if they – I mean, it'll make the TNT title. It'll be like – the toy manufacturers will love this shit, though, but the video game people will probably hate it. But, like, I mean, I feel like you could do this with everybody. Like, you get custom side plates in WWE.
Everyone can have their own gimmick with it, so.
Have their own look. You know, they've done custom championship belts for different people over the years, so they could do it. But, yeah, I just don't understand how we got here. It doesn't make any sense. Like, it should never have been like this. There should have been something else.
What Wardlow was in a storyline with MJF. It made the most. If MJF didn't exist, he would have won this title March 16th. But they had to go back to that storyline. You had to do that storyline. So Max cheated him out of it. Scorpio should not have redropped that belt to Sammy. They did it because they clearly wanted not only...
Actually, honestly, yeah. If you never interrupt Scorpio's title reign, his title reign is then long enough for you to be like, okay, at least he got like 100 plus days of the title.
Yeah, it's like 120 day title reign.
But because you kind of decided that you wanted Sammy to win it for the heat, which ultimately didn't go anywhere, you know.
Sammy won it for that 2 weeks, and you know he became a 3-time champ. But all right, let's move on. Moving on here. Scorpio squashed his ass, man. He's the new champion with a big celebration. Moving on, we had Jon Moxley backstage. City wouldn't be caught off guard. He knows what kind of a monster he's taking on in Brody King. But people are forgetting that Moxley's a monster too, beating Tanahashi's face in and cutting people up in blood and guts. Said he knows who King is, and Moxley will find out just how bad he wants it. Step up or get stepped on. A little bit of Mark Sterling and Tony Nese backstage. They're trying to get a petition to sign Swerve Strickland removed from the roster, and they asked Lee to sign it.
Yeah, how the hell is that a thing? There's apparently a document that you can get backstage to get someone removed from the roster if you get enough signatures. Like,
the only reason Tony I'm buying this a little bit, I really don't like this, by the way, is that he's a lawyer. But I don't know. To me, that's funny.
Even a lawyer, like, what did he draft up these documents like 2 weeks ago or something? Like, what?
Right. What the fuck's he doing? Christian Cage and Luchasaurus appearance. You want to take the lead on this one. What did you think of Christian Cage and Luchasaurus shit talking?
So Christian was like just continuing to fill the MJF role is what I'm just going to keep referring to it as, because it's basically what he's doing, you know.
That's a fair thing.
It feels like obviously it's not the same quality as MJF, because MJF has his own thing that he does each time, but Christian is talented enough on the mic that he kind of sort of just leans in on some things maybe he wouldn't have gone for or wouldn't have been allowed to go for, you know, in the WWE, right? I did not expect this soon after everything that happened for them to be like calling Matt Hardy out from the back and just addressing it directly.
Ballsy.
It's ballsy. I mean, obviously Matt was okay with this. I would assume if he's in any way able to contact with Jeff, they talk to Jeff.
Right.
If he's allowed to contact people while he's in treatment, I think he's in treatment anyway. Well, while he's getting help anyway, we'll just call it that until we hear details. But then Matt Hardy just kind of has to sit there and take it from Christian for a bit. And like Christian said some really personal things, like basically blaming Matt, saying like, yeah, you were trying to ride his coattails on one last run, and so you didn't care what he was doing. And like, that's like some mean shit. And then like, Christian also like saying that because he thought he was friends with Jungle Boy, even though they barely knew each other, that he made Jeff sound like the sober one. And it's just like, Christian is just, I keep writing it as going too far in my notes. He obviously hasn't gone too far yet. My fear is, though, and I heard somebody else say this, it might've been Alvarez, it might've been somebody, I can't remember, is that they're going to get to a point with this where someone is going to say, it's like, where Christian's going to say something he probably shouldn't. And everyone's just gonna be like, ugh. But I don't know. I'm just curious. I don't know what this is ultimately going to... Obviously, we're going to get Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus at some point, and probably Jungle Boy versus Christian at some point. After that, I don't know where you go with them, with these two as a pairing. I'm sure Luchasaurus can fight other people. I'm just kind of like... It's one of those burgeoning storylines, or whatever the term would be. Like, it's on the verge of being a thing, but I don't know where it's going to quite go. They can go a lot of directions with this, so...
That they can, yes.
But... I was not as high on the next segment after this, but I yeah, Evil Luchasaurus is just, it's really interesting because
it is. And Christian again dropped some fucking big one-liners that had a lot of people talking, and I think that was the whole point of it. But yeah, it heel Christian, best way to put it, you said it, taking the place of MJF right now is a complete cunt that we want to see fucking get his shit kicked.
I mean, I think they're testing to see, like, if we want to have a character like this, if MJF's contract doesn't get sorted out, do we just have Christian, like, teach? Because I think his voice doesn't quite sound right for it. I'm sure Luchasaurus could cut promos like this. Like, he's intelligent.
Luchasaurus, yeah, he's very good.
Or we need to get we need him to get the mic handed to him and him just say some, like, fucking, like, reference some, like, medieval torture device or something that he knows about, like, you know, and say, I'm going to do that to you, you know, like.
Instead of, a video give package recap Blood and Guts. Menard said he did it for Jericho. Regal said he had never seen such destruction. Kingston said he wanted more. Claudio Castagnoli and Jake Hager were backstage with Tony Schiavone. Hager said Claudio wasn't tough enough and as hard as him, pointing out Claudio had never won a world championship, unlike him. Claudio said that he beat Sabre and Jericho's team at Blood and Guts. Next week he'll go 3-0 against Hager. Look, this matchup coming, it's fan service. It's for the people that were a fan of that tag team, etc.
Yeah, we the people chance.
And it makes sense in the storyline that he beat his ass and Hager wants revenge because Hager's the heater. So he's a little upset. But
yes.
Yeah.
He's like, I was supposed to be the big man and you made us tap out.
Yeah, so well put. You can't sum it up any better than that. Swerve in our glory. They defeated the Butcher and the Blade with the Bunny. So this match is kind of was spread across the commercial breaks here. Still working out the kinks between their tag team.
Yeah, dude. I've not seen anybody botch a leapfrog like that that wasn't on, like, Dark in a while. Like, that was wild.
And
Blade took a knee just, like, right to the back of the head. It was brutal. Like,
so yeah, they're playing it up that they're not on the same page there. So the match, it was just a rankings match, and Butcher mentions that multiple times. He's like, look, we can get in our rankings. We can get more money if we get in the rankings and get championships. Yeah. And, you know, hey, it's the easiest story in pro wrestling. You want to make more money. And that was Butcher's side of things. Swerve fired back, took out Butcher with a running thrust kick, and then he and Lee hit a doomsday senton for the win. The story here really is after the match, right? Hobbs and Ricky Starks interrupt.
Yeah, Hobbs on the mic. How about that?
Yeah, he's tired of the disrespect. Starks was tired of them acting like they're somebody.
Ricky Starks started ascending into the stratosphere during this promo.
Ricky Starks got fucking hot, and he said he beat their ass right now.
I love it when Ricky gets hot, bro. He just goes out there and he's pissed, and he's like, "Fuck you."
Takes that to the next level, man. And Ricky Starks, dude, I was eating this shit up. I'm not gonna lie to you, I was eating this up. And then the Young Bucks music hits.
He vibes like not like fucking Ric Flair. Like, you know when Ric Flair would just get going? Like, that's what Ricky Starks does to me. Like,
Ricky Starks is fucking incredible. The Young Bucks music hits.
There's a reason he's a pillar.
Absolutely.
And now the Bucks are in on this. And we're going to get, what is it called? The Triple or Nothing tag match, which is going to make me hate myself. Because
Matt puts over the tag division before reminding everyone they're the top dogs in the division. Nick referenced the Observer saying they had a 4.5-star match, Double or Nothing, an off night for the Bucks because they knew that would get some heat. But they couldn't get the job done. Instead, it was the Bucks who get Jurassic Express. They proposed a Triple or Nothing next week. They were drowned out by a massive FTR chant, which the Bucks clearly were like, nah, fuck that. The three-way tag was made for next week. Then, Garrett, the storyline that they're running with has to be, it has to be that the Young Bucks are scared of the FTR.
Oh, it has to be. And I mean, that's the story that the FTR has been saying like every interview for the last
like, chance. I was getting like a years. Fucking schoolgirl because I'm like, yes.
I was like, bro, the crowd's so into FTR. There's a reason why Dax Harwood is in the conversation for Wrestler of the Year already. Like, it's like, you know,
dude. So, just all in all, what did you think of the match here? And then this. We talked about Starks, but this promo after setting up the triple tag that is, I'm sure, fucking kick ass.
Yeah, that's gonna be an awesome match. Other than like almost Blade dying, that was fine. There was a really good hot tag from Keith Lee at one point.
Yes, yes. Good mention of that.
And then Lee made a really last second save. The last second save might have been a little late. The referees need to get their shit together is all I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying it's the ref's fault. I'm just saying, like, if they're not on the same page with these pinfalls, they need to get on the same page. Like, because it's not, it's making it look like the amateur wrestling promotion that it actually is sometimes. And like, you know, it's just bad. It's shit only happened. Like, I never even remember even that happening in Impact really all that much. You know what I mean? Like, so I'd have to go back to the tape, but as far as I'm aware, like, so like y'all just get it together, referee corps. But no, yeah, it was good. And Ricky Starks, like I said, he ascended into the stratosphere on the next in the next segment, or in the next like little section after. And then the Young Bucks, you know, polish or you know, come in. The segment is, it just does a really well put together segment. I really wish we were getting FTR versus the Bucks next week, obviously, but we're not. We're gonna probably save that for a pay per view. The fact that the crowd's already that into it tells me that that's gonna be like probably it might be the biggest match of the year, honestly.
That
like,
match truly is. It's FTR at their full potential, and the Young Bucks are there. People are gonna hate me for
saying this now, but y'all need to get ready for the Young Bucks to lose that match because there's no way the FTR are dropping three championships at the same time that involve politicking from other promotions. No shot.
And that's if they are. They might not be holding all of them.
They have to be. No, they have to be. You can't do that match without FTR potentially winning all the
games. We'll talk about Death Before Dishonor, but I don't know, man.
Nah, if they drop to the Briscoes, then I'm just done with fucking Ring of Honor completely. Literally. No, I'm not even joking. So, I'll be like, you know what? Oh, yeah. Ring of Honor title match? Skip.
So after that, we jump into House of Black cut a video promo. Black says he's envied the pain Moxley inflicts on himself and others. Brody King will leave his mark on him to even further. Cool. Eddie Kingston gets a promo. Shivani asked Kingston about Jericho, but before Kingston answered, he congratulated Wardlow and everyone on his team at Blood and Guts, even Claudio. Turned his attention to Jericho, who didn't bleed. And then, yeah, he's just pretty much cutting some heat on Jericho. Jericho interrupts on the video board where he had Tay Conti slam a car door into Ruby Soho's hand. So, setting up a couple things here. We're going to get a Soho.
You got to make sure you can't put Ruby Soho on TV because that would maybe make her get over, you know.
Yeah, so instead, slam the car door on her. Shout out Kingpin. yeah, I mean, it's an Eddie Kingston promo, right? Cool.
Yeah, no, it's good.
With Jericho doing some fucking sports entertainer shit. The feud continues. Dark Order promo, and someone wrote, moments like this are why it's impossible not to root for AEW. Rochester is the late Brody Lee's hometown. Evil Uno, Silver, Reynolds, 10, Anna Jay, -1 were out there. Silver was hyping up the crown. Evil Uno teased a disbandment, but he said the Dark Order is here to stay. They have a proclamation, and he knows who should say it. He handed the mic to -1, but QT Marshall interrupts, calling -1 a charity case. QT said Brody Lee was a legend, but -1 takes after his mother. Challenged -1 to a fight, but then Hangman Page's music hit. He and the Dark Order beat down on QT with 10 hitting Brody's discus lariat. -1 said he'd wait to pin QT until he's 19, playing the long game. But, I mean, look, bro, this was beautiful. I mean, this was sentimental. I honestly
thought they were going to break them up for a second. I was like, did you really need to bring out -1 for, like, God, what the right? hell? Like,
right?
And then I was like,
no, man. Also, it kind of brought the Dark storyline to TV. Like, in a weird way of doing it, it kind of did, because they are feuding on Dark. So,
I mean, that's not the first story. I mean, we had a storyline go straight jump from Dark. It was so good, they just put it on TV, and that's, you know, the Serena and Mercedes thing. So, like, you know.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. But, I mean, anything else you got from that promo?
I mean, you know, it's just good that the Dark Order, they're going to, I mean, so it seems like the Dark Order is going to be a much smaller faction now, probably, unless they add new members.
Just the six of us. So that's including -1.
Yeah, so it's going to be who's left, and it sounds like it must have been, I would assume after Stu and Allen both decided not to re-sign, he probably went to everybody else in the Dark Order and said, you're going to stay, though, right?
And they were like, yeah. Low-key just kind of getting out because he's going to Ring of Honor now, so.
Oh, yeah, Colt Cabana, yeah.
He's gone now, so.
I'm not surprised that Colt Cabana is going back to Ring of Honor, to be honest with you, but And his kind of fits more of that Ring of Honor. And he was on, I actually liked what he did on that Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor show. I enjoyed the match that he had, but
yeah. So JR gets brought out for hour two. Next was the Penta match that we covered.
Penta says no.
Samoa Joe versus Jay Lethal for the ROH Television Championship is announced for Death Before Dishonor. Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Adam Singh were backstage. Dutt was ecstatic, saying Lethal would win the title. Lethal said he wouldn't take Joe lately, but he'd take his championship, talking about how they finally got Joe out of his cave.
Do you think we're going to see Joe at some point? Like, hopefully soon?
Hopefully. Sterling and East backstage looking for more signatures to get Swerve fired. They ran into best friends who scoffed at them, and after some Sterling and Danhausen shenanigans, Nice and Cassidy was booked for Rampage, which we'll get into. The Acclaimed and the Gun Club versus Roughing It and Fuego del Sol.
Fuego del Sol. Yeah.
Bear Boulder, Bear Bronson, and Leon Ruffin, and Fuego del Sol. All guys who were featured on Dark this week. I like that they were featured
the job
on that.
Squad. No.
featured on that and then brought to this. Always nice. During the Acclaimed entrance, the Gun Club grabbed the mic from Caster, not letting him do his rap. So
I was pissed.
Top 10 anime betrayals was
I knew it was over then and I was pissed. I was like, no, how could you cut him off?
Feeling beat down. He's holding up one last scissor. One last scissor for daddy ass. And he doesn't fucking do it.
He thought about it too. He was like,
he hits him with the famouser. And top 10 anime betrayals right there.
Absolutely. 1000%.
It's a sad day for all of us, right?
But now we get Daddy Ass and the Ass Boys versus Acclaimed, and Acclaimed are going to be baby faces. Let's go.
Yes, sir. And they're going to fucking roast the shit out of them.
Oh, it's going to be so good. I'm so excited to have a baby face Max Caster who's just
baby
tearing
face.
Everybody to shreds.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. A Miro video promo aired. He said Malakai Black was someone who preyed on the flawed, which doesn't work on Miro, who is flawless. The Redeemer is coming. Hey, yo. I'm ready for the Miro versus fucking Malakai.
Let's go, dude. That's going to be like
bloodbath.
Yeah, it's bloodbath.
We have that audio cue.
Miro went, it's not in white rooms anymore. He's in dark rooms now.
He's transitioned, man. Come on. He bought the new fucking DLC pack. Got his ass out of there. Here, Gary, you take the lead on this one. We got Thunderstorm defeating Nyla Rose and Marina Shafir.
Nyla and Marina came out with umbrellas because they were fighting a thunderstorm. Lamau. That was pretty funny.
I rolled my eyes, but then I laughed. I'm guilty.
Marina Shafir actually has gotten pretty good at chain wrestling. You could tell at the very beginning of this match. So Marina's picking it up really fast, which is really cool. Because remember, like 6 months ago, we were like, oh man, I hope she figures this out soon because she's good. But
getting those reps in, man. We talk about it, getting the reps.
And getting her on TV like this, hopefully the crowd will start to remember that, like, hey, this is a person, like... I honestly wonder if, like, because that was such a weird crossover time in WWE when, like, all these MMA women who weren't known to the wrestling world, I wonder if that's just her problem. They just don't know, like, they just don't know who she is, you know, like, but if they did, they'd be like, oh shit, this is actually a big deal that we have this chick, like, you know, like, because this is like, this is the one of the, I know, again, people are going to take the, or be like, oh, probably not take me seriously if I'm going to say this, but I feel like that's one of the biggest robberies they got out from underneath WWE just releasing everybody. It was one of the four horsewomen of MMA. Like,
absolutely. And she's married to Roderick Strong, who is someone who's fucking incredible at professional wrestling.
He's got to be making his way there soon, right? Anyway, we got to get the full Undisputed Elite. But anyway,
dude.
But anyway, yeah, no, I mean, Tony's hit, excuse me, I'm not sure if this match was just like cut. And a lot of matches on this show just got cut for time because I didn't feel like they got that much. Tony's still out of control with the hip attacks. I'll concede this team works, but I still don't understand the purpose of it. Is it just like because you don't want to run back Tony versus...
Get him on TV. I think he really wants Thunder wrestling more on TV. And this was a way to
get
her...
her wrestle on TV instead of...
This was a way to get her in a match, you know? It just...
But you know what they're going to do? The last time they leaned into a team like this was the Blackpool Combat Club, and they think they're going to do the same thing here, but they're not. Like,
yeah, we'll see.
I don't think Thunderstorm is going to start a faction of badass women. It might. It'd be cool, but I don't think it's happening. Like,
that'd be pretty nuts.
We'll see. I don't know. Thunder Rosa's got the charisma to do it. They just don't let her use it ever. So we'll see.
Jade Cargill and the baddies were backstage. Jade was annoyed about Hathaway recruiting Layla Gray to the baddies last week, but Hathaway said it took
even Jade didn't like last week
to turn someone to their side. Jade says if he doesn't deliver, he'd be in trouble. And he dropped a fucking Stokely Hathaway line. He said if the world championship can have an interim holder, we can have an interim baddie. And that fucking got me. Of course that's how they're going to do this. You should use an interim baddie. Yes. I really think he pitched that on his own. And I'm not even – that's the kind of guy he is. I guarantee you he fucking pitched that and was like, this is
he probably great. Just met Layla Gray backstage before the match when they were going to squash her and just like, hey.
Dude, and they're also
– what are you doing besides this on this show? Are you on Dark this week? No, I'm not on Dark this week. I'm just on whatever it was, Dynamite, that they had her squashed on. Like, and then they went to Tony and they were like –
they all just ignore him. Like, it's brilliant. It's great. They give him the side eye. I love it. Interim baddies. Stokely Hathaway fucking that this another dub for him already in a short AEW career. Danny Garcia was backstage. He said Yuta isn't striking out to fear his apart, and he'll see Yuta at Death Before Dishonor. Garrett, I know you're hyped for this.
I sent you a card like a couple of days after Death Before Dishonor was announced, like on like the Tuesday when that the Dark with I think the Pure Championship match on it maybe or something like that. I sent you what I thought was going to be the card for Death Before Dishonor. And so far, I have been 100% accurate on what I predicted. I'm not going to reveal it all here, just in case some of it's wrong. But I'm actually, I could just tell everybody what I was thinking. I mean, I'm 4-for-4 so far. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I get like 6 of the matches wrong or something?
Yeah.
Like,
here, you, I'll hit this next segment. You pull that up.
Yeah.
FTR were backstage. Cash said no match had ever taken as much out of them as their match at Supercard of Honor. Death Before Dishonor is coming up, and there are still some who think they're the best in the world. They challenged the Briscoes for one more match, which, spoiler alert, it was accepted. So, FTR versus the Briscoes. I'm fucking down for that, dude.
I actually don't have it. Apparently, I just sent it to you in messages. I didn't actually write it down anywhere.
Fair enough.
But other matches I had, besides the ones that have been announced, I think I put the Gresham versus Moriarty match, which hasn't been officially announced yet, but is pretty much confirmed at this point. But like, I mean, it was mostly just things that make sense. Like Serena versus Mercedes was another one, which again, wasn't confirmed, but they kept teasing. Yeah. So it's basically, it's all the matches you think that will happen. And Daniel Garcia versus Yuta was the first thing that I was like, you got to do this while this feud is still going. Like,
this is the way you have to. And I'm so glad they are, but yeah, man, let's get to this main event. We had the interim AEW World Championship match. Jon Moxley, he defeated Brody King. I believe this was a very good title main event. This was a good first defense for Jon Moxley's title reign here, depending on, you know, if it is his second title reign or not. That's still to be determined, but he defeated Brody King, and it was a good showcase for Brody King. I got to say. Yeah. I think this accomplished what it needed to. No one thought King was going to win. But it needed to look menacing, and it needed to get himself over in the match, which he did. He looked
very strong. It kind of accomplishes sort of the same idea that, like, okay, so you had Hangman beat Danielson to get legit, right? Because everyone needed to see that Hangman was on the same level as Kenny, right? Okay, fair enough. You did that. Then you had him face Lance Archer. And the reason why that made sense is big, massive, hulking dude. He beats him. Now he's, like, super legit, right? Okay, I feel like this is Jon Moxley's version of that. We didn't need to see him because we've seen him beat. Did he win against Danielson? Yeah, he barely beat Danielson at the pay per view when they were feuding. And so you kind of already don't have to do that, but you don't need to do that anyway. We know who Mox is. He's been a former champion. He's been all over the place and won championships. So, but what Brody King does in this is he kind of acts as both, because everybody knows how good of a wrestler Brody King is. And like, they just knew exactly what we wanted from this match. Heavy striking, really physical and brutal. There was a chop from Brody King at one point that just sounded awful and folded Mox. Like, I've never seen Mox just like folded by a chop.
Oh yeah, he put him over.
And they were just so loud with those chops. They hit like every kind of suplex, I think, a slam, like some slams. There was a pile driver at one point, which just looked great.
I think Brody King definitely put some respect on his name for people that were kind of thrashing him a little bit for being like, really, Brody King's going to be Moxley's first guy? Yeah, this is the Brody King, dude. He's legit.
Well, that's kind of the thing. Like, when they first brought in Brody King, unfortunately, they just brought in a lot of singles wrestlers since then. He's one of those guys that would have been in a tag team. If they hadn't brought in Buddy so soon to join that group, I think, honestly, they would have had more time to breathe with Brody, and they would have just had them both wrestling singles matches before their tag matches. But they wanted to do, obviously, the triple feud with Death Triangle, so they had to introduce people. But it was just like, hopefully we see more out of Brody. I mean, it doesn't feel like it, but I mean, if you put it in the right feud, you could do matches. I'm honestly shocked.
Well, I think we already have
Brody versus Penta. Like, isn't it a little weird that now that you think about it, that we never got like Brody versus Penta or Brody versus Pac or Brody versus Ray? Like, we could have gotten any of those matches. They just didn't decide to do it. You know, maybe they will now. Maybe that was, but yeah, it's a little interesting.
It looks like he's going to be facing Darby Allin next. So that's kind of cool too.
Maybe this is just the chance. They're like, yeah, we'll put you in something.
Yeah. The finish here was King wanted the Fire Thunder Driver. Moxley escaped and rode King up for the two. He hit an unhooked DDT, followed up by a hammer and anvil elbows. He looked for the Bulldog Choke, modified it into a sleeper. King fell backwards to break the hold, but Moxley popped up and locked it on again, leading to a referee stoppage. And the show went off air at an awkward time. But, it worked. Moxley victorious in what I believe was a fun, enjoyable main event match. Takes us into Rampage, where we had an opener that was great that we already spoke about.
Yes.
Athena and Statlander cut a promo on Jay Cargill, calling her a coward, afraid to defend her championship. Perfectly, the promo executed what it needed to. Hook video highlighting all the ways he's throwing people around made them tap out. It's just a little Hook package.
It feels like with these packages, they're slowly distancing Hook from Danhausen, and it's probably for the best.
Yeah, I think they're done. It feels like with Danhausen back with the best friends and Hook here, they're like, look, our tag division's still growing.
It feels like Danhausen was like, we can do Hookhausen, but then they had no idea where to go with it. And then they realized if they do Hook for like a year as a part of this tag team, and then they don't win the tag titles really soon, like, there's just no way you can book that and have them, like, they couldn't have had, as much as I like Danhausen, the kinds of matches AEW's tag division kind of demands, you know? But it is fine. I mean, I'm glad that Hook's going to at least maybe, it does feel like we had like 2 or 3 months where Hook was just spinning wheels, you know what I mean? Like, because of this, and hopefully we can make up for some of that lost time.
He's going into something else now. I'd love to see him do more stuff with Team Taz again. I think that's
be good.
That'd be a good spot. The Gates of Agony. Toa Leona and Khan, with Tully Blanchard, defeated Lee Moriarty and ROH World Champion Jonathan Gresham. Hold your feet here before you get crazy thinking. Caprice Coleman did commentary for the match, and Bobby Cruz did the ring announcing. The match was going pretty well, but Garrett, the story here is Jonathan Gresham has joined the Gates of Agony? Is he part of Tully
Blanchard? I think he joined. Yes, but today, I think he joined Tully Blanchard Enterprises.
What do you think of that? I mean, and he kind of walked out of Moriarty, setting up a heel turn for Gresham.
Makes me excited because hopefully Jonathan Gresham is going to sit down with Mr. Brian Cage and be like, "All right, let's touch up on some of your fucking wrestling, bud." But
damn it.
I'm just being honest. You know how I feel about Brian Cage. Great look, phenomenal, but he just gets gassed in like 2 minutes and it just can't do that much, it doesn't seem like. Or if he can, he just can't. He's not stamina. He doesn't have enough stamina to like move. He has that unfunctional strength that people talk about a lot, right? Like, he looks awesome. He can't lift shit though, like, not like functionally. Like, he can lift in the gym, I'm sure, but could he lift that weight and then carry it across the ring and then do a slam to it? I doubt it. Like, you know, like, but anyway, no, and I'm just, so hopefully that happens, but
yeah, Tully Blanchard Enterprises, though, I'm liking the storyline for ROH.
Yeah, Gresham, Cage, and then now Gates of Agony as well. So it's like, that's a cool faction. I hope they do something with it. I assume this will be the new, like, lead faction, maybe, that's kind of leading the pack and Ring of Honor, maybe. It kind of like makes me think, well, damn, there's no chance that Lee Moriarty is winning the title now, unfortunately, but
Gresham needs to be your champion. In my eyes, I think for until they have something solidified with what they're doing with Ring of Honor.
Whether it makes it difficult to do those title matches for a while. So,
yep. So, but I do think Samoa Joe could drop it, and he probably will.
Yeah, there's a good chance. If they want Joe on like purely in AEW, I would say. Yeah.
Eddie cut a promo backstage. Kingston praised Takeshita. Promised to get Jericho's blood for Ruby Soho in the Blackpool Combat Club. Challenged Jericho to a barbed wire match. Every drop of blood is a sin that you've committed, Chris. And the last blob of and that last drop of blood before you pass out. That's for my Ruby. Eddie Kingston fucking killed this promo. This feud is still going on, and I love it. I love it.
Do you think this ends the things between those two specifically after this match? Do you think
this is the last match? Okay. 100%. Okay. You can't go beyond a barbed wire death match. You just can't.
Yeah.
Right? There's no, there's nowhere to go, man.
Exploding barbed wire death. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, Serena Deeb and ROH Women's Champion Mercedes Martinez picked up a quick squash here. Coleman still being on commentary. Great touch. After the match, Deeb clotheslined her and locked in the Serenity Lock, and she quickly tapped. So I guess another one of your predictions, pretty much. Pencil in Deeb versus Martinez at the pay-per-view, yeah?
Uh-huh. Well, so I wrote in my notes. Like, I enjoyed the slow burn of the storyline. Like, they let it build up for a couple of weeks.
Agreed.
And if you look back on this historically, if you ever go back as a Ring of Honor fan, like, if this is something that you go back and watch when Ring of Honor is back on weekly TV and you go back and rewatch, I assume it'll be on Fight TV or something like that, Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, and you want to go back and see where this feud started, you now have to go back to random episodes of AEW Dark, you know, which I think is kind of cool because it makes you then look at AEW. But it was the correct time to advance this. We needed a match for Mercedes at the pay-per-view, and there wasn't time to just throw in new people. So it would have felt forced. So this made sense.
Agreed.
I kind of wish I could have seen where the storyline would have gone over time, though. But what are you going to do?
Definitely thought we might have got a match versus Thunderstorm.
That's it. But you know, you got to have stuff for the pay-per-view, so.
Yeah, so Shivani interviewed Gresham and Blanchard. Gresham was sitting at home until Blanchard called him up. Despite signing a contract back in March, Shivani announced that Tony Khan made Lee Moriarty versus Gresham for the ROH World title official for next week's Rampage. Cool. Fighter Fest week one. Some more matches. Speaking of those matches, I'll hit those in a minute, but we got our main event here, which we had Orange Cassidy with Danhausen defeated Tony Nese with Smart Mark Sterling. I thought this match worked pretty well, man. I'm glad Orange Cassidy's back. You can feel his presence back throughout both shows. He worked a good main event match here with Tony Nese. I'm liking the pairing of of Cassidy and Danhausen. But this, to me, just elevated Cassidy's stock even more after that fucking brilliant match he had with Orange Cassidy. Will Ospreay. God, I'm butchering all over the place. but no, man, this was really good. This was high impact. Cassidy did a Stundog Millionaire and a Michinoku Driver for a near fall. And Cassidy puts that into a spinning DDT. I mean, dude, these guys had great chemistry together. And shout out Tony Nese for working a fucking main event of Rampage, man.
This is like the third or fourth, I want to say, main event of Rampage he's had. Or maybe not main event.
And it's
like,
a nice touch, dude. He gets all these reps in on Dark. And I feel like these little nods here are rewards for, like, hey, man, we appreciate it. We appreciate
it's you. It's kind of weird.
Repping our shows.
Because you think both of these guys kind of have a similar style, but they really don't, actually. Like, they're really kind of clash in a lot of ways, but it worked. Like, there's this thing in wrestling where sometimes, like, they can be completely opposite styles of wrestlers, which they're not in this case, I don't think, but they're not exactly the same. So, like, you can't really compare them, in my opinion. But what you can do is say, well, their styles really melded together well. That happens in wrestling sometimes. It doesn't necessarily have to line up for it to work.
Yeah, right?
I don't know, like, I there was some really cool stuff. Like, I wrote down a bunch of stuff, but, like, I don't even want to go through all of it right now, like, because we're already, like, almost an hour and 20 minutes into this. But, I mean, like, this is actually something I do want to say. I did not realize, I guess, until this match, Nese, when he hits the ropes, he runs, like, really fast. Like,
he does, man.
Like, I didn't realize how fast until, like, they did, like, a little spot where you could see it, and I was like, damn, he was fucking cooking there. But, yeah, no, I don't know. I'd never seen a counter to the sunset flip like that where he held onto the ropes And then, well, then he kicked him in the head. And then, like, it was just great. You know what I mean? Like,
it was. And I feel like the show was, it was really bookended by great matches. And I,
oh, there was a tornado DDT counter into a Northern Lights suplex that I really thought looked great. Oh,
so good. JR, let me also mention this. JR really did put over Orange Cassidy on commentary a lot.
Well, yeah, because he said the thing that I honestly expected, which was that, like, at first he didn't get Orange Cassidy, but now he's, like, a really big fan, which I'd say I was in the same boat. It's not that I didn't like Orange Cassidy. I was just, like, I thought he was in that same category as, like, some wrestlers who were just kind of, like, don't take the business seriously. And to some extent, that really annoys the shit out of me, because it's like, well, then why are you working in the wrestling business? But, you know, he does not as bad as the Bucks. He doesn't get on my nerves as much as Matt and Nick do, so he's fine. And he also actually appears to take it really seriously when you actually look at the guy. Like,
he just knows his character. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
yeah, man, that'll do it for the matches of this week. Good, very, another strong Dynamite, another strong Rampage. A very strong Rampage, actually, in my opinion. This was a really well-done Rampage. That didn't have any championships defended, nothing like that. Just great matches. And that's nice to see. So, Fyter Fest next week, Garrett. Claudio Castagnoli versus Jake Hager. This is Wednesday. Anna Jay versus Rinna Deeb. The AEW World Tag Team titles. Young Bucks versus Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee. Versus Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs.
You know, we actually didn't mention this at the time. One thing I will say, I don't know why, like, again, I don't know. I guess they just wanted to have a big title match, maybe, like, for the tag titles on the show. But, like, it doesn't feel necessary for the Young Bucks to come out and beat two up-and-coming tag teams. I just don't understand the point of that. Like,
well, just, yeah. I think in booking, the only reason they did it, well, because the Ricky Starks kept saying they're the best tag team. Again, yeah, they're doing a little bit of what Jurassic Express did, walking out and becoming the ones issuing the challenge. Right? I see what you mean by that. Agreed. Yeah, I don't know. But hey, I hope that match is great. Kirsten
King. It'll be a great match. It's like, why, you know, no one's questioning, no one's going to believe the Bucks are going to lose after just winning the championships. So it's like,
but if they
could have just had, like, a really good, it's like 2-on-2 match. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know.
Fyter Fest next Friday, the ROH world title, Lee Moriarty versus Jonathan Gresham. Private Party versus the Lucha Brothers and a Gun Club interview. Dude, this sounds like right up my fucking alley.
I assume we'll get another. I mean, that doesn't feel like the full.
No. We'll get another match. Usually we don't even have anything from Rampage, but I guess with Fyter Fest, maybe it'll be live. And I hope it is. And then Fyter Fest week two, we got the Kingston versus Jericho in a barbed wire death match. The Jericho Appreciates decided will be suspended in a shark cage. Garrett, was this a Shark Week idea pitched by Warner?
Fuck if I know.
Do you think they got a memo like, hey guys, so we'd like you to do something for Shark Week?
I could see it. I mean, like,
right? I bet that's what it was. And there,
then, I mean, it's not like the fucking shark cage thing is new. Like, it was an old thing. It's just like, when there's a reason why it got buried when WWE did it. Like, because this isn't interesting. Like, what is the point? Like, if it'd be one thing if someone was suspended above a cage, like, by the villain. I always thought this would make so much more sense. Like, it's always the villains who are suspended in a cage so they can't interfere, right? And then the gimmick is that they always interfere anyway, right? So, like, I always thought it would make more sense if, like, the villain suspended the good guy's friend in a cage and, like, to win, to get them out of the cage. I know this sounds really hokey, but this would make a lot more sense than just suspending some bad guys in a cage. Like, you got no other way to prevent them from going to the ring. You could just ban them from the building, like, you know? Like,
yeah, no, exactly.
It's not
gimmicky, right? Agreed. So
it doesn't, I don't care for it, but it's like, it's whatever. Like, you know, I'm sure it'll be really fucking funny to see the JAS up there, but, like,
exactly. Daniel Garcia will be in a silky and we'll all rejoice.
Yeah,
Daniel Garcia in a silky, give me what I want. All right. But that'll do it for us, guys. Thank you for checking this out. Thanks for checking out last week's Blood and Guts. Those of you that stuck around, we really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We will be back next week talking about Fyter Fest week one. And yeah, man, that'll do it. Catch you on the flip side, Vision.
Scorpio Sky, more like Scorpio by there, bud.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.